Amen. Do you ever have problems with certain words in the English lexicon? There's a lot of words or phrases that I think people get messed up with. I'm actually one of those people, so I was thinking about that, especially when you've got phrases or words that sound very similar, but they mean like radically different things. You know, like the phrase, this one bugs me, so please don't use this in front of me, or if you do, use it correctly. And then I got to write it down so I don't mess it up. I couldn't care less, right? Now, if you say I could care less, well, then that means you could care less, and there's more to it. When you say I couldn't care less, that means, look, I don't, your story, your life, I don't really care anymore. So to get that one, I couldn't care less. Also, if we have a team of horses and a group of people ride on those horses, you might say that the cavalry is here, right? Now, cavalry is different than Calvary, right? Calvary is the mountain where Jesus was crucified. Do you see? These are two totally. And then it happened to me. It was because Rich texts me. He's not here on Sunday. He was at home. He was watching, right? You were working, so I had the sermon on, and he was like, "Hey, Mark, great sermon. One thing though, you kept talking about how Job fell prostate on the ground." He's like, "I don't know if you're aware of that. The prostate is an organ inside a man's body that often gets cancerous and causes him to not pee very well in life. Where prostrate means to fall down." Now, I've messed up in the past, and I'm shocked that I'm pretty sure I said it like three or four times. Did anyone else pick up on it, and you were just nice? Four times? You guys were all just very nice, like, I get it. Or you were like, "Which one is it? Is it prostate? Is it prostrate?" I messed up, and my deepest apologies. We're going to talk a little bit about how Job fell prostrate on the ground. See, even when I say it, that doesn't sound right to me, but it is. Job chapter 2. For those of you that weren't here, I want to give a quick recap of Job chapter 1. Job chapter 1 was the worst day of Job's life up until that point. We get a glimpse into the heavenly realms. We learn that there is a time, this book being very old, we get a privileged peek into the heavenly realm of what's happening behind the story of Job, and that is Satan is there. Satan is called the accuser. He hates you. All he wants to do is accuse you of bad things. He wants to whisper in your ear. So if you're sitting around and you're like, "Man, I'm horrible. I'm nasty. I'm gross. God hates me. God doesn't want me. I can't go to church because if I go in there, I'm pretty sure that everything will crumble and fall down on top of me." And I just tell you, that is not God. That is, in fact, Satan. He's whispering. He's telling you how bad you are, but that's not what God actually says about you. And so God had considered, and I personally again believe that God is trolling Satan and saying, "Hey, have you checked out my guy Job? He's pretty awesome." And so Satan says, "Well, yeah, he only loves you because you bless him." And we talked about what it means to, if we have prosperity in our life, we often can become very pious. It's very easy to be religious when everything's going well in your life. And that's what Satan says. He says, "Look, but just take away the hedge of protection and cause bad stuff to happen in his life, and he will curse you to your face." So God acquiesces and says, "Go ahead, you may do this, but you can't touch his life. You can't touch his physical body." And then in these series of very tragic challenges, oh man, challenge is just not the right word, these very tragic disasters, a servant runs up to him and tells him that all of his cattle are dead. Another servant comes up and says, "All your sheep and donkeys and all the servants that were tending to him are dead." Then he says, another one came up, and then all the oxen, they're all dead, and they've been carried away. And then the final blow, someone comes up and says, "A great wind from God showed up, and it blew down the house where your kids were at, and your seven boys and your three daughters all died." In one day, Job experiences some of the most painful things that that could ever be done. And what we learned, which was important, is even through the worst, God is with you. So now we turn to Job chapter 2, and we say to ourselves, well, things can actually get worse. Did I not change that one, Joshua? There we go, technical difficulties, yeah. He'll fix it for us. Yeah, so, because the title of today's sermon is this. Yeah, he loves that, he drew that. The title of today's sermon is Things Can Always Get Worse. Have you ever experienced that? Like, bad stuff happens in your life, and you're thinking, there's got to be a terminus to this. It's got to end, and things got to become better, right? And then you find out more things happen. Maybe you got notification that, that's how good Joshua is. Things can always get worse. Isn't this a great sermon? I'm so excited to preach it to you. What'd you learn in church today? Well, things can always get worse. Well, this is great. But, yeah. Yeah. We end up saying, oh, things are getting better, and then you're always thinking, when is the shoe going to drop? Right? How many of you are thinking that right now? Like, things are good in my life, and I'm worried that I'm going to walk out of here and something bad's going to happen. Yeah, we have this fear because no one likes bad things. And then when bad things happen, the worst thing that can happen is then worse things happen. You know, maybe you just found out that your parents are divorcing. And then in the exact same day, you find out that your best friend is moving cross country. It just goes from bad to worse. What if you find out that your childhood friend just passed away? And then the very next day, you found out that you have a lump that has just shown up out of nowhere. That's what's going to be happening with Job. Job chapter 2, we've just... Can it get worse for a guy who has literally lost all of his material possessions, his business, his wealth, and all of his children? Can it get any worse? And the answer is, yes, it can. I just love this sermon. This is going to be great. Job chapter 2, I invite you to follow along. That way you can make sure that I don't preach any heresy and I don't say anything weird. Job chapter 2, verse 1. It's a very big repeat that's happening. On another day, the angels, you have a text note on angels, it means sons of God, so these are special creatures. Maybe they're not technically messengers per se, but they're this heavenly court that God hosts, and these angels came to present themselves before the Lord, and we ask, why did they come to present themselves before the Lord? And I said, I have no idea, no one has any idea. We just know that they're there. And Satan also came with them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said to Satan, where have you come from? Once again, it's almost verbatim as what's happened from chapter 1. Where have you come from? It's not because God is like, man, Satan, where have you been? Haven't seen you for a millennium or two. You know, this is crazy. What you been up to? No, he's not chit-chatting. He's getting ready to troll him again, which is, to me, just classic how God works. Like, where have you been? And Satan says, from roaming through the earth and going back and forth on it. Again, very similar to chapter 1, almost verbatim. And then God does it again. And I'm sure at this point, if Job knew what was going on, Job would be like, hey, can you leave me out of the conversation, please? Stop telling people how righteous I am, especially Satan. He's bad and this is not good. But the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? There is no one on earth like him. He is blameless and upright, a man who fears God and shuns evil. And here's the kicker. He still maintains his integrity, though you incited me against him to ruin him without any reason. So once again, brings up, why do bad things happen to you? There's a myriad of reasons. Maybe because you just make dumb choices. Maybe it's because you just live in a really evil world and bad stuff happens. Or maybe bad stuff happens and there's really no good reason that you could see. But I think that there's one reason that I'm going to explore as we go through this that I think would be super helpful for us to understand. And that is, maybe we're going through bad stuff so that we can be a fantastic and powerful witness to the world, to other people. And I'm going to prove that through some of the relationships. Probably Job's main relationship outside of God. There's this interesting stuff that happens between Job and Mrs. Job. I wish we knew Job's wife's name. We don't. We're just going to call her Mrs. Job. Or do we have a good name for her? Jobet. We'll call her Jobet. I like that. We got Job and Jobet. I think this will be great. All right. So there's no reason for this to happen. And yet, even though you said if he had his life ruined, he would curse me to my face. And in fact, the opposite happened. He didn't curse him to his face. Instead, he actually blessed God. And he said, "Thank you, Lord. You have given and you have taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." So then Satan replied, "Skin for skin. A man will give all he has for his own life, but stretch out your hand and strike his flesh and bones, and he will surely curse you to his face." Essentially what Satan is saying, look, it was bad. Job experienced a lot of terrible things in his life, but let's face it, Job is really not at rock bottom, because maybe it was Satan that came up with the phrase, "At least he still has his health." Again, a phrase which I think is just absolutely dumb. Like, your whole life is ruined. Oh, but hey, you've got your health. Well, no, you could still be extremely miserable and be super healthy. But imagine if you were extremely miserable, everything's falling apart in your life, and let's add to it that you end up getting sick. And not just, "I got the sniffles, I got a cough that won't go away." This is going to be something that's going to hit Job in such a massive way, it's going to be painful to watch and to listen to. So he said, "Look, God, if you just make him sick and give him all these incredible diseases, then he'll curse you to your face." So verse 6, the Lord said to Satan, "Very well then, he is in your hands, but you must spare his life." So you can do anything short of killing him. At this, I'm sure a smile went on his face as Satan departed, thinking, this is it. I don't care how righteous you are. I don't care how much you love God. I don't care how much integrity you have. If you have bad stuff happen to you, oftentimes the first thing to be jettisoned is living righteously for God. I think we've all experienced it. Have you ever had something really tragic in your life happen? And after that happens, you almost get this sense of, you know what? I want something good to happen, and I'm going to make something good happen. And so I'm going to go out and do whatever I want to do, whether it is a sin or not. It doesn't matter. God owes me. I think we've all been tempted to, or at least we have done it in some way, shape, or form. We almost feel like we have a right to sin because of the misery we're going through. And Job becomes this example of someone who does not do this. So verse 7, Satan's like, all right, this is going to be fun. Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and afflicted Job with painful sores from the soles of his feet to the top of his head. Then Job took a piece of broken pottery and scraped himself with it as he sat among the ashes. There's been times in my life I've gotten an ingrown toenail. Do you know how painful those things are? I one time did a 50-mile hike in Boy Scouts with an ingrown toenail. And I hid it from my scoutmaster as we were doing this whole thing. And then it was the last couple of days as we're getting near the end. And I'm in my tent and I'm pulling off my sock, which by now is almost fully encrusted with pus and blood. And I'm scraping out some of the disgusting, gross nastiness. And of course, it hurts. And as I'm walking along, I'm kicking stuff. And every time I kick a rock, I kind of squeal. And I'm doing this. And all of a sudden, I'm like, oh. And all of a sudden, I hear this. And there is standing the scoutmaster. And he looks down. And my toe, I don't know, it's probably about it grew three times that day. Like, it was massive. And he looks at me and goes, Mark, you can't hike with that. I said, I've been hiking with this for the past 48 miles. What are you talking about? We only got two more miles to go. He goes, you are lucky this is not early on. I would have pulled you from this. I said, that's why I didn't tell you. And I tell you, that was a miserable 50-mile hike. But that's nothing. That was my toe. What if I had that all over my body? Painful boils. Now, I found some stuff out, and I can't read this. I don't know how to say this. So if there are medical professionals among us and I mess up and you can say it better, please rise and speak. But apparently, there was a name given to a specific disease with lots of boils and stuff. Hyperimmunoglobulin E syndrome. Did I do that pretty well? Is there any medical professionals? If there's no medical professionals, I said that perfectly. So, and it's really, really bad. Again, lots of boils. And so I decided to try to find out from the text, from Job 4 through 37, Job has these conversations with these friends, and as he's going through it, he actually gives more insight into his affliction. Here's what he says. In Job 7, he talks about how he has worms, scabs, broken, and festering sores. In chapter 19, he talks about how he has bad breath. Literally, he has bad breath. And it's offensive to his wife. Guys, brush your teeth, okay? If you want to get a girl, just brush your teeth. That's helpful. Also in 19, he talks about how it's this massive weight loss. He literally calls it skin and bones. This is how his body looks. In chapter 29, he says that his skin is black and peeling. Yeah, exactly. I'll get to that, yeah. And then in chapter 30, he talks about how he has a fever all night that cannot break. And what most have said, I'm not a medical profession, but I read a lot about them. And they says that also because he does a lot of scraping, because there's this fevery, itchy stuff, and it just opens everything up. This is consistent with a disease called black leprosy. Now, how'd you like your entire body, head to toe? Your skin has turned, they say, like black, like leather, like it's rotting flesh on your body. Now, if you had this, especially back in that day, what would happen to you? Unclean. Oh, you are out, bro. Yeah. I mean, I try to do my best now. It's still kind of hard, and I know we still got a little of our own fears and stuff. You know, the moment someone's near me and they start coughing, I'm like, unclean, unclean, get away from me. But imagine this, someone with this nasty, oozing, just imagine someone walking in and this is what they've got all over their body. Would you be like, can you please go sit in the balcony? Can you please maybe go visit a doctor before coming back to church? You would come up with whatever it takes because this is disgusting. And this is the reason why he was sent out, as it says, he was sent out onto the ashes. What this would have been the garbage pile out of town. Now, contrary to popular belief, they did not have waste management trucks that would come by and grab your little buckets and pour them in and get rid of your trash this way. No, what you do is you'd walk outside, you'd throw your trash, which would also include your feces as well. That was also part of it. The smell would be overwhelming. And again, I don't live on a farm, but I'd like to think I could, but I probably would die quickly. If you start putting all of this stuff on top of each other, what actually happens to that pile? It gets really hot. It starts to fester, and it becomes, this is what Jesus later on talks about as a picture of hell, that it is, the flame is never quenched. The smell is horrible. You are outside of everything. This is where Job is now hanging out. It went from bad to worse, and you wonder what will happen to Job. I know it's hard for us to think, what would we do in a situation like that, but I don't know. I know some of your stories, I really do, and some of your stories are extremely tragic, and some of the bad stuff that's happened. When I look at Job, I don't know if I know. I've heard bad things. I know people that have cancer. I know people who are struggling with disease. I know people who are struggling with disabilities. Recently, we were praying for a gentleman who was added to our prayer list. They found out that he had cancer in one of his kidneys. And so he was scheduled to, you know, and it's tough to live on one kidney, but you can. So they went in and removed the kidney, and then afterwards they found out they removed the wrong kidney. It went from bad to worse. And this is what Job is struggling with. Now, let's talk about his wife, Jobet. Jobet shows up. Now, at this point again, women, if your husband or boyfriend had nasty boils and stuff all over his body, his skin has turned black and it's flaking off, and he has halitosis now, and it is gross and disgusting, would he be welcome in your bed? No, you'd be like, you're disgusting and gross. Get out of here. That's why Job ends up on the ash heap. But thankfully, Jobet shows up. And Jobet has some words to say to our friend Job. His wife said to him, "Are you still holding on to your integrity? Curse God and die." Well, I guess things could get worse. So now you've lost your house, your kids, your job, you've lost your health, and now you got the wife essentially saying, let's just get this over with. God obviously hates you. Why don't you just curse him? He'll strike you dead, and you'll be out of your misery. And probably think in the back of her head, I'll be out of my misery too, because her life has also been upended. She now has no money. She now has no kids. And now her husband is leprous and contagious and has to live outside on a dung heap. What do you do in a situation like that? It's hard. Job's response is one of those that gives a lot of encouragement nowadays, which ties into the witness that Job, I think, has in the middle of his misery. He is able to still give witness to God. He says, "You're talking like a foolish woman. Shall we accept good from God and not trouble?" I think it's a great statement, because what that does is it helps us. Maybe you're going through some really bad stuff. And it's really tough, because I know people come to me and they're like, "Pastor Mark, here's all the things that I'm dealing with." And it is almost always followed by, "When will this end?" And my answer is always the same. I have no idea. They're hoping, you know, can I withstand for 6 weeks? You know, maybe I can suffer and go through some difficulty for maybe a couple of months. But if I start saying, well, you may be in this for years on end, their countenance fails, and they are just racked with no hope for the future. And Job here is trying to say, hey, sometimes good things happen and we're blessed by God and we're really, really grateful for it. Sometimes bad things happen, and maybe it's not because you are causing all the pain and misery in your life. Maybe there's another reason. And maybe that reason will never be explained to you until you get to heaven. Question, when does Job find out what happened? Doesn't. I would be very curious when Job dies And he gets to heaven. I'm sure he would be rushing up to God and say, okay, hey, God, all that stuff that happened, why? And now if you phrase it in a poor way, it can sound really bad. Well, you know, Satan and I had a bet if you could, you know, withstand all the bad stuff. No, 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 no. That is not how that happened. It sounds that way. It looks that way. But if I were a betting man, I would think that God would be talking about the witness that he's going to have. Because he is about to be approached by three friends, and they're going to have a conversation. And then, I don't want to give away too much of the story, but it was fun. I was chatting with the vicar about this. Do Job and Jobet get a divorce? As best we can tell, we don't think so. And the reason why is later on, Job has more kids. Well, who is the mother of those kids? As best as we can tell, it's Jobet. She is watching her life fall apart, her husband's life fall apart, and she's like, I can't handle it anymore. But Job says, look, sometimes things happen, and I'm not going to allow the bad stuff in my life to turn me into someone that I am not. And maybe my suffering and my pain can be a great witness to someone else. And eventually Job's witness to his wife, I believe, resulted in her sticking around. It then continues on with this discussion. And in all this, Job did not sin in what he said. And we'll get to that in a couple weeks, that Job is not some pious guy. He's not some stoic guy that doesn't cry and isn't in misery. He's in a lot of pain. He's in a lot of hurt. And it's okay to say that. But along with that, you would want to also have your confession of faith about who God is. God is faithful to me, even though I don't understand why I'm struggling, why I'm suffering. Lord, can I be a good witness? Can I give glory to you, even though my life's falling apart? And I'm telling you, that is probably one of the most powerful things you will ever do in your life. So Job's three friends. I always like when we get this, because great dad jokes come out of this particular one. So when Job's three friends, Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamite, heard about all this, that had come upon him, they set out from their homes and met together in agreement to go and sympathize with him and comfort him. And so here's my silly dad joke. I learned this one a long time ago. Like, who is the shortest dude in the Bible? Bildad, and he's a Shuhite. He's like really small. He's really. Boo. Yeah, I know. Come on, Diane. Come on. There we go. All right, good. Sorry. Got to have some levity. This sermon stinks. This sermon is terrible. So Job has these three friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. He ends up with the fourth dude that shows up, who's not much better. His name is Elihu. He shows up way later. But these three friends, they find out what's going on, and they meet together, and they want to go and be with him. Now, this is one of the most incredible things that happen, and then everything falls apart from chapter 3 on, but at least it starts good. When they saw him from a distance, she had to leave to go sit with Heather, and guess what she said? Nothing. Not a thing. If you have someone who is hurting and in a lot of pain, don't try to fix it. You're just going to make it worse. And if you do it with me, you might get punched in the face. But I promise I won't try to punch you in the face. And if you're one who's going through this, you may need to ask yourself, you may wonder, why did I sin? Did I make a mistake? Does God hate me? Is God with me through this whole time? You know, what is the purpose? I mean, again, if Job heard that, oh, this is because something happened with God and Satan, I actually wonder what he would have thought about that. Who here would love to suffer so that someone else could be saved? Would you do that? Let's say you're out on a boat and it is about to sink and people are dying all around you. Would you gladly and willingly sacrifice your own life so that someone else would be saved in a physical thing? I think a lot of us would. Paul talked about this when he talked about the Jewish nation. He said, if I could, I would spend eternity in hell so that all of my Jewish friends would be saved. Wow. Can we intellectually say, if I went through suffering and that suffering brought a witness to a nurse who then got to know Jesus, who also then maybe there's a candy striper that comes to know about the grace and love of God, or maybe there's other family members who had been pushed away from their family, and now they're coming together, and there's a witness to say, God is still here, and God loves you, and God is still in control. Would you gladly and willingly die for someone else so that they'd be saved? I don't know if you would or not, but I do know someone who has. That Jesus left all of his comforts. He left all of his wealth. He left his entire kingdom. He left the joys and pleasures of heaven, and he came down to this earth. And when he came down here, he suffered unlike anyone else has ever suffered. And he didn't suffer because he had done any sin. He was righteous. He was blameless. And more than Job, he actually didn't commit any sin in his life. And there were these people who took him and put him on a mock trial, and then he was wrongly executed. And he died, and he did it willingly and gladly. Why? Because he loves you and he loves me. And he's willing to sacrifice his life so that you could be saved, so that you could be here, so that you could have life. And more important than just living this life, more importantly, he actually wants you to be in heaven with him. That's his whole goal. And sometimes we end up going through some suffering so that we see Jesus a little bit more clearly, so we understand what he's doing, and we see the depth of his love for us. And that he will always stay with you no matter what's going on. I don't care if you've gone through the worst day of your life and then the next day you're going through something even worse. Jesus says, I love you. I have died for you. Trust in me. Believe in me. Look to me. I will give you the strength to keep living day after day. I will give you the hope and encouragement to keep drawing breath into your lungs. And when you finally breathe your final breath, I will usher you into the glories of heaven. That is God's calling. That is God's purpose for sending Jesus. And now, maybe your life can have that same witness. I was just talking, it's great. God is always good giving great remembrances of things. And I brought him up before, a guy by the name of Alan. His wife came out after one sermon, and she was weeping because he had just gotten diagnosed with a cancer, and I can't remember the name of the cancer, but all I know is that it is a very nasty cancer that kills within 6 months. And the person who gets it will go through it, an amount of pain that is unlike any other out there. And I don't know what it is, but it is horrible to think. And it was so interesting talking with Alan, because you know what he did for the first 3 months? And sure enough, it did happen. He died almost within 6 months of that diagnosis. You know what he did for the first 3 months? He spent all his money flying around the United States to all of his high school friends, his college friends, every one of his family members, and he said, I need to tell you about Jesus. Look, you can hate me, that's fine. I'm not embarrassed anymore. I'm going to be going to be with Jesus. I want you to be there with me. And he spent months phone calling, letter writing, visiting. And it was amazing that he saw his life, and people were like, how can you do that? You've got cancer. You're going to be dead soon. You're in such pain. And he's like, I don't care. I'm going to give a witness to God. I'm going to give a witness to Jesus Christ. And may my life and may my suffering, may my pain bring glory to God. Alan isn't suffering anymore. He has no pain. He has no cancer. He has been completely cured because he is now with Jesus. And my prayer for you is that if you're struggling and you're in pain and you're hurting, first of all, from last week, God is with you. You may not feel it. You may not tangibly experience it, but we know he is with you. And second of all, maybe there is no good reason. Or maybe there is a good reason. Maybe you're going to be a witness to other people that'll be unlike anything else. One day you'll be cured. You'll be perfect in heaven forever. Will you join me in prayer?